Right, our final speaker for the session is Anar Patvin, Associate Director, Health Project Research and Development, Genesee Health System. Anar has over 10 years' experience advancing innovative systems-level transformations benefiting the most vulnerable populations within our communities. She has been involved in programming at local and national levels across diverse sectors, including education, research, healthcare, and the legal system. Most recently, she has co-led a successful effort to achieve the first ever FQHC designation for a public community mental health authority, Genesee Health System in Flint, Michigan. Ms. Patvin.
Thank you, and I'm also here with my co-presenter.
I'm her boss and her helper.
And so much more than that. I would like to read her little.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. No, yeah. I apologize. I didn't
no, that's okay. Let's get us both introduced here before we start talking.
Yes, we are accompanied by Ms. Tisha Deegan. Ms. Deegan has worked in the public mental health substance abuse field for 32 years. She has responsibility for the Genesee Health System's integrated health initiatives, which address the often poor health status of the 16,000 people served each year. Under her leadership, GHS has created an integrated safety net that strives to improve physical health and quality of life, reduce risk of deaths from treatable illness, and enhance life expectancy for people with complex co-occurring conditions.
Thank you. We're going back and forth here today, so I thought it'd be helpful to know who both of us are right from the start. So, you want to start us off? Thank you. Oh, that's great, too. No, it's good.
We're not
We're
actually
going back
seeing
and forth slide to slide. So.
Yeah, we are. We're not actually seeing the slideshow, though. Yes, we kind of are.
Oh, because it's the PDF version. I wonder if there's a way to.
Yeah.
Because, I had a similar issue.
See? Oh, great.
It just doesn't work, but enter does.
Enter moves.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Neither Tisha nor I have any relationships to disclose. We'll be talking about our barriers integrating physical and behavioral health care and talk about how we overcame those barriers. And I will hand it over to Tisha here to talk about our mission.
Good morning. So Genesee Health System is one of 46 CMHs in Michigan, and in Michigan all CMHs are governmental, county-based, either a part of county government or public entity authorities. So we're one of 46 of those. We're also one of 18 prepaid health plans. So we're the manager of all Medicaid that comes into the county as well. And likewise, the Substance Abuse Coordinating Agency. So essentially, all money that comes in to serve Medicaid beneficiaries or people who are uninsured with substance use disorder, mental illness, serious emotional disturbance, and developmental disability comes through us, and that's about $150 million that we spend in the county. We are responsible for 110,000 covered lives or so out of the 400,000 people who are in the county. And this is Flint, Michigan, we're talking about, which has its own infamy, as you probably are aware. So along about 2006, 2007, we took note, as did everyone else, about the premature mortality that is alarming with people who have serious mental illness, the loss of years lived, 25 to 30. In Genesee County, it's more like 30 to 40. If you factor in co-occurring substance use disorder with other complex conditions. So to make that real, in Genesee County, if you're male, if you have mental illness, if you're African American, and you're 50, you have a 50-50 chance of being dead. And yeah, we kind of had that oh wow experience as well as we began to understand this. So we said to ourselves, what can we do about population health? We need to do something as the biggest, strongest, best funded part of the safety net. We need to do something about population health and how can we move toward a systems transformation that positions us to address the fact that that 50-year-old man is not dying from his mental illness. He's having a heart attack or a stroke and dying. Same reason that'll kill all the rest of us except 40 years sooner. So we moved over that 6 or 7 years or so through a transformation process to what we call a recovery-oriented system of care that comes out of SAMHSA. You know, the Surgeon General has said repeatedly that, you know, there is no health without mental health, and we believe that mental health isn't just the absence of mental illness, but rather it is the presence of hope-fueled recovery for the whole self, inclusive of primary care. So this culminated in a change of identity. We changed our name from Genesee County Community Mental Health to Genesee Health System and underwent a rebranding, and which then culminated in the mission statement you see in front of you there, which is a very different mission statement from a typical community mental health center. That's gone on all this past year. Meanwhile, the industry has sort of caught up, and there's a lot of pressure for community mental health centers to integrate with primary care. There's pressure from SAMHSA. There's pressure from the National Council for Behavioral Health. There's pressure from our Michigan Department of Community Health to integrate with primary care. So, seemed simple. Seemed like the goal to deliver integrated care such that people's lives would be extended and improved quality of life for the people that we serve in arguably one of the most vulnerably challenged counties in the country. Seemed like that would be pretty straightforward to do that. And after all, we'd had an FQHC co-located in our medication clinic for 10 years. It just seemed like it was going to be very simple.
So when I came into the project, I mapped out this nice, beautiful straight line, and I hadn't had any children yet, so I thought the world worked in straight lines. And, you know, as Tisha described, we were a public CMH. I thought, great, we'll be the first public CMH to become a federally qualified health center, and voila, we will magically achieve the triple aim of improved population health outcomes, higher quality, lower costs. So, we went through that process. Everything was moving along. Our vision was a straight line, and we received a year-long health center planning grant. We are one of just 5 mental health, community mental health, to receive that kind of grant. We received that, continued the straight line planning, and in a very exciting announcement, we also received our new access point application for funding to become a grantee of the federally qualified health center program. But this is where the straight line started to become a little crooked. We were told that all of the changes we wanted to make based on our year of planning, we weren't able to implement them immediately like we thought we'd be able to. We were actually held to our original statements in our new access point application, which we wrote before we did that wonderful year of learning. So that was the first crooked spot in the line. And let's see here. It kept going. So it was really exciting that we were the first public community mental health to become a federally qualified health center, but I didn't realize, and I think our team didn't realize, that being the first meant we would be met with a lot of trepidation on the part of our project officer at HRSA, who we were very new to her. She was new to being a project officer. She was new to public entity models of federally qualified health centers. And then we were the community mental health center on top of that. So we were told that our nurse practitioner model was out of compliance, which again is just one of those ways that sometimes the staff representing the policies aren't always quite up to you know, a full understanding of what the policy really means. We did in fact receive technical assistance from the very first and very successful nurse-led federally qualified health center out of Philadelphia in planning ours, so we knew it was in compliance, but that was a little dance and took a little time, and the line became more and more crooked as more and more of these barriers popped up. A couple more barriers that came up were that we also were funded to become the first federally qualified health center to serve residents of public housing in Michigan, and we had this sort of pre-agreement with HUD, and we were going to locate a health center in one of their buildings, and even though their strategic plan stated they would you know, partner with federal grant opportunities, by other federal agencies to improve health outcomes of their residents by providing physical space to support the programs. The Michigan HUD office just wasn't so excited. Again, we were the first of our kind and very new, and everyone met us with so much trepidation, and it just created a lot of barriers that we weren't expecting. So it took HUD, they did eventually agree, and we are starting construction right now on that health center, but it took them a year to become comfortable with what we were trying to do. So I'll let Tisha talk about the dollar signs piece of this.
Right, so it's really exciting. We're going to get $1.2 million for 2 years, right? This is going to be great. And we get that announcement in June of 2012. We have 120 days to open a clinic. We don't have as much as a stethoscope in our possession. And remember, we're mental health professionals, although some of us also have public health background. So we're, yay, this is going to be great. But guess what? You get the grant, you don't get the money. There were delays. There were many, many delays, mostly from confusion on the part of HRSA. Remember, we're the first in a number of categories, not understanding who we are, what we are, how that governance thing work when you're what's called being co-applicant with the health center as a public entity. Tremendous confusion, understanding that of all of the FQHCs in the country, less than 5% are public, and most of those are health departments. All were something other than CMH until we came along. Lots of confusion. I thought this morning, and we also are racing to the airport when we get done, if I showed up at Logan today with a passport with one name, okay, and a ticket in another name, do you think they're going to let me on the plane? And then what if I start to complain? What if I start to say, but it is, I am me. Look at, I'm me. I'm going to be in a room somewhere with our TSA friends, and there's going to be a lot of delays, and I'm going to miss my flight. That's what happened to us, and that happened before we changed our name. Then we changed our name, and there was another 6 months of delay. So the point is, as a NAP, as a new access point, you are going to get that money someday, but that enhanced Medicaid isn't going to flow because you've got to apply for a Medicaid number, wait for it, with your name, which then is going to change. So all of that was a huge, huge contributor to us not having any money to start with. However, we're a community mental health center. We have $150 million, okay, as a community mental health center. We, in the beginning, remember that nice straight line Honor talked about? In the beginning, thinking this was going to be very simple, and then finally realizing for all the reasons, just some of the examples Honor gave you in terms of the barriers that are thrown up, that we were going to bring about successful integrated care, we were going to have to do something other than move in a straight line. Honor recently became enamored of football, and when she was doing the slides, she put this slide in there, and she got very excited and said, hey, do you know there's this thing called a double threat quarterback? You know, somebody that can run or throw. And I said, you're young, you don't even know. There's a thing called a triple threat quarterback, and even a quadruple, like in some high schools and small colleges where the quarterback can run and throw, and he can get a lateral and receive and even kick. Well, we're like that. We had to become like a quadruple threat quarterback, right, in order to make this happen. We did that by taking a step back and saying, wait a minute, this whole, like, firewall thing we thought we had to have as a public entity receiving this money. So we're the public entity and here's the health center. Forget about it. Just forget about the firewall. Embrace this idea that we have 50 years of experience in community-based recovery as a community mental health center. And by the way, we give away more than $5 million a year to other safety net providers in the community to help build that infrastructure, to food kitchens, to shelters, to the Genesee Health Plan. For gosh sakes, why are we uncomfortable sort of funding the health center? And we got over it. So to date, we've spent in the first year of operation $1 million of CMH money. And even so now the enhanced Medicaid and so forth is starting to trickle in. But as a public entity, as a new access point, if there isn't a pile of money already sitting there, you are not going to be able to operate. The grant itself is not enough. So we thought about this and we're like, okay, we're just going to embrace who we are as a community mental health center and recognizing that at that process we changed our name, Genesee Health System. It's pretty simple for me then at this point in lots of meetings and presentations to explain why we get to call ourselves a health system. Because now we, a part of us, is providing that whole health care in the primary clinic that we operate.
So this is just here as proof that we did actually survive, overcome all these barriers, and we did indeed open a community health center within our 120-day limitation. And we are quite proud. Basically, our model is a transdisciplinary, team-based, peer-driven model that I think, you know, nowadays a lot of people are catching on to being the model to really bring about improved health outcomes. And I think more so for me, that model is representative of the need to build relationships across a variety of contexts for the people that we serve. So it's about building relationships not just around their medical issues, but also around behavioral issues, around social issues that the people we serve may have. And all of this is really the peer-driven piece of it, I think, is the most important for bringing about improvements before this vulnerable population begins to slip, you know, into dire and dire circumstances that become more costly and more difficult to ever achieve solutions to. So here's just an exciting picture of these wonderful people who really drive our system in a very innovative way.
I just want to say a note about this. We think of this as sort of the next wave of innovation, and that is to sort of infiltrate our entire recovery-oriented system of care with people with lived experience. So these are people who have survived a heart attack. These are people who live with diabetes. These are people who live with heroin addiction and in their early recovery journey with mental illness. This is our second cohort of recovery coaches who've been trained in motivational interviewing and so forth. And we have, I don't know how many total right now, we have maybe 15 people working at this point throughout our system. Anna's going to talk in a minute about a couple of the new ways we're going to use the peers in the system of delivery of care. But just, for example, as you think this is all kumbaya and warm and fuzzy up here, our first year of operating a navigation team, a recovery navigator team, a hotspotter team, with that cohort of consumers being served by that team, these are people with at least 2, usually 4 complex conditions, including mental illness, substance use, and then a chronic, like a Section 2703 Affordable Care Act chronic condition like asthma, diabetes, and so forth. Of the cohort served in that pilot project, which was helped to be funded by some discretionary money from MDCH, we had a 75% reduction in inpatient utilization. Why we care about that is because we're a capitated system. We're a managed care system. So that money not spent on unnecessary hospitalization is being spent on community-based services. That small team cohort contributed to an overall 25% reduction in inpatient use for that year, 2012 to 2013.
So just quickly to some of the ways that we are currently using or about to start using the graduates of our recovery coach training program. We have embedded recovery coaches in the care team at the health center. That's been happening for since the beginning of the summer with some very exciting preliminary outcomes. And we are also, we have just hired, just started doing this about a month ago, working with recovery coaches, working with people who have been placed on a substance use disorder services wait list to engage them in the services that we have available throughout our system. May not be exactly what they are think that they're looking for, but we're connecting them with the health center primarily, which has a lot of services available. We're also placing them in our recovery housing program for people who are working on their substance use issues and trying to keep them engaged in that program. One of the, I think, important pieces of this is that I just lost my train of thought. Well, That's primarily the way we're planning to use them, and I'm just excited about, oh, I know what I was going to say. So something important that we're doing, because the health center was really, the staff were reluctant at first, this term recovery coach, they weren't comfortable with it, but we're trying to make the discussion, the recovery discussion, be about things that are much broader than substance use and mental health issues, and also be about recovery from health conditions and recovery even from poverty in our community. So I think that has been going quite well since we started broadening the discussion in that way. And our kind of our final motivating slide here.
So I walked the Boston Freedom Trail, and which was wonderful, and kind of in honor of that, I'm thinking we're really seeing ourselves as sort of CMH kind of leading the freedom fight on the recovery revolution, if you will. That's a quote that comes from someone that we've been following along in our work in training recovery coaches. So as we move forward and open that second site in the public housing development and also an integrated site within the mental health building, so two more sites are coming, there will be continued barriers. There always are. And that's assuming the federal government continues to operate. When it doesn't operate, that gets a little more complicated, trying to get, you know, scope changes and so forth done at HRSA. That was interesting as well. So we just offer this final thought for you is kind of keeping us going, and hopefully if you launch this kind of journey, it can help you go as well. There's our contact information, and again, we do have to dash for a flight as well, so we can stay a minute, but please feel free. Honor's on a bunch of seminars and webinars. She does those for National Council. We do this circuit a lot all over the place, so we are very happy to spend as much time as anyone might be interested in learning about how to be freedom fighters. Thank you.